Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 12, chapter 3, verse 33. Avrata Vatavo Saucha Bhikshavas Cha Katumbina Tapasvano Grama Vasa Nyasano Chata Lolupa Avrata Bhatavo Socha Bhikshavascha Kutumbina Tapasvino Grama Vasa Nyasino Chata Lolupa Avrata, failing to execute their vows. Bhatava, brahmacharis, asaucha, unclean. Bhikshava, prone to begging. Cha, and kutumbina, householders. Tapasvina, those who have gone to the forest for austerities. Gramavasa, village residents. Nyasana, snyasis. Atyata lolupa, excessively greedy for wealth. Translation, the brahmacharis will fail to execute their vows and become generally unclean. The householders will become beggars. The vanaprasthas will live in the villages and the sannyasis will become greedy for wealth. Purport, brahmacharya celibate student life is practically non-existent in the age of Kali. In America, many boys' schools have become co-educational because young men frankly refuse to live without the constant companionship of lusty young girls. Also, we have personally observed throughout the Western world that student residences are among the dirtiest places on earth, as predicted here by the word of Soksha. Concerning household beggars, when devotees of the Lord go door to door, distributing transcendental literature and requesting donations for the propagation of God's glories, irritated householders commonly reply, "Someone should give me a donation." Householders in Kali Yuga are not charitable. Instead, because of their miserable mentality, they become irritated when spiritual mendicants approach them. In Vedic culture, at the age of 50, couples retire to sacred places for austere life and spiritual perfection. In countries like America, however, retirement cities have been constructed where elderly people can make fools of themselves by wasting the last year of their life playing golf, ping pong, and shuffleboard, and by engaging in pathetic attempts at love affairs even while their bodies are horribly rotting and their minds are growing senile. This shameless abuse of the venerable last years of life denotes a stubborn unwillingness to acknowledge the actual purpose of human life and is certainly an offense against God. The word Nyasino Charta Lolupa indicates that charismatic religious leaders, even those who are not charismatic, will proclaim themselves prophets, saints, and incarnations to cheat the innocent public and fatten their bank accounts. Therefore, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is working arduously to establish bona fide celibate student life, religious householder life, dignified and progressive retirement, and genuine spiritual leadership for the entire world. Today, May 19, 1982, in the central city of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, we have awarded sannyas, the renounced order of life, to three young men, two Brazilians and one American, with the sincere hope they will faithfully execute the rigid vows of renounced life and provide authentic spiritual leadership in South America. Translation, the brahmacharis will fail to execute their vows and become generally unclean. The householders will become beggars. The vanaprasthas will live in the villages and the sannyasis will become greedy for wealth. So this continues the predictions for Kali Yuga in terms of the ashramas. Previously the brahmacharis were mentioned, and here again all of the ashramas are mentioned. The brahmachari is characterized by austerity, simple living, and study of the Vedas, and obedience to the teacher, the guru. They have many vows, such as not wearing perfumes, not wearing shoes, not using umbrellas, not dressing in fancy clothes, etc. Dedicating themselves to study, not wasting their time in frivolous activities or in gossip, etc. So they have quite a strict life. And in Kali Yuga, as expected because of the degradation, none of these rules can be followed by a student. Of course, the real brahmachari is a student of the Vedas, and obviously in Kali Yuga, nobody's interested in studying the Vedas, so technically the brahmachari really doesn't exist. Instead, young people study material subjects. So completely, this is completely different from the person in the Vedic system. Now these students, the brahmacharis, were single, and they lived separately from women up until the age of maximum 25, and then they would go back to the family, their family, and perhaps get married. In some cases, they would make a vow of brahmacharya for life, and they would never get married, and they would stay in the ashram and serve the guru. So the system in Kali Yuga is not there. There are students, but they don't study the Vedas. Instead, they study material subject matters. They are not taught to remain single, rather they freely associate with the opposite sex. They are not taught austerity. Instead, they indulge in all sorts of sense gratification. And in fact, they often break all the regulator principles. So the real brahmachari does not really exist in Kali Yuga. There is a purpose in the brahmachari life, and that is to train one so that one can be a proper grihastha and later give up grihastha life. So if the brahmachari ashram is not intact, then the grihastha and vanaprastha and sannyas ashrams will fail. Because there's no basis for spiritual life and detachment from sense enjoyment. So that is taught in brahmachari life. So it's not there in the early days. It is very difficult to teach that later on. So the brahmachari is taught all these things, and then he's allowed to get married. Most of the population gets married, as you see in any society. It's very rare that a person doesn't get married. So even the brahmacharis, that is the vaishyas, kshatriyas, and brahmanas, they are allowed to become brahmacharis. Most of them get married to guarantee that they will not fall into excessive enjoyment in household life. They are first given brahmachari training, and then they can go into that household life. So as householders, they have many rules to follow. They have many rules to follow because the scriptures understand that it is a dangerous position for them. Once they become householders and become engaged in raising a family and working and so on, they're very likely to forget their spiritual goal, and they will identify strongly with their material bodies. So to prevent that, there are many rules. Of course, we have the brahmacharya life previously to educate them, and then as householders, they have to follow rules of restriction so that they cannot enjoy excessively. The householder must restrict his senses. He must be clean. He must study the scriptures. He must worship the Lord. He must work at an honest occupation. And he is duty-bound to support his family and protect the wife and the children, etc., to give them an education, while at the same time following all strict rules of sense control. Here it is mentioned that the householder becomes a bhikshu, which means a beggar. So in other words, the householder is not responsible for his family and does not work to support them. Instead, he goes out and takes money from other people. So that is not considered to be a proper occupation for a householder. He actually has to have an honest occupation and work at that. no matter what varna he is. The only begging that is allowed is in the sannyas ashram. The sannyasi has no job. Actually, the brahmachari, vanaprasa, and sannyasi, they can all beg. Because they have no sustenance as such, so they have to get support from the householders. So, the householders cannot beg, because they're the ones that the brahmacharis and the sannyasis go to get something. So they have to give. They have to be the charitable, and they have to give to the sannyasis and the brahmacharis and the vanaprastas. They have to support the other ashrams. So the householders cannot be beggars. They have to be the opposite. So, unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, even the householders become beggars. They're trying to get support from other people, which means the duties are more or less reversed. And the vanaprastha literally means march off to the forest. Then here instead, it says the gramavasa, they don't go off to the forest, they live in the city. So they've forgotten their real purpose of renunciation and detachment from their children. So a husband and wife as a vanaprastha should separate from their children and should live simply in the forest, eating the roots and fruits and wearing bark clothing and sleeping on the ground. This is their life. But here it is said instead, the vanaprasthas live in the village or the town or the city. So they don't really fulfill that function of renouncing. The purpose of vanaprastha is to negate the attractions that have arisen in grihastha life. So that's why they have to live very simply in the forest. They have to separate themselves from their children, from friends and from relatives. They shouldn't be dependent on them. So this is a reversion to a simple life like the brahmachari. And it is a preparation for sannyas. Of course, not many people are qualified for sannyas. In the Varnashram system, only the brahmanas are allowed to take sannyas. This is a more extreme renunciation, where the husband separates even from the wife and from everyone else, and lives alone in the forest or wherever. And is supposed to be a controller of the senses. Sannyas means to give up. Sannyas means give up everything. So literally, he gives up all connection to all family members, including the wife. So he is not part of this whole system set up. Instead, he wanders alone around the world. In this verse, he is said to be very greedy for wealth, for material things. So this is the nature of a so-called renunciate in Kali Yuga. Instead of renouncing everything, he becomes attracted to everything. So again, he's in the opposite position from what he should be. So these are the characteristics of the ashramas in Kali Yuga. In other words, they don't really exist except in name. So the names may be there, but the people do not function in those capacities as a brahmachari, a grihastha, a vanaprastha, or a sannyas, because they do opposite activities. So this, of course, is the nature of tamagun. In tamagun, a person does not know what to do and what not to do. And he actually does the opposite thing. Instead of doing the right thing, he does the wrong thing. He does everything backwards, reverse. There's so many rules in the system, Varnashram system. A person in tamagun will do the opposite. So, similarly here we see in Kali Yuga, where tamagun takes prominence, then all the people in the ashramas do the opposite thing. Instead of the brahmachari, instead of doing vows, he doesn't do his vows. And the householder, instead of working, doesn't work and he begs. The vanaprastha doesn't go to the forest. And the sannyasi doesn't renounce. So the ashramas become meaningless. Of course, in most countries of the world, they haven't heard of ashramas really, and therefore the situation is extremely pathetic. Everybody is engaged in sense gratification from birth to death. So, it is very difficult to properly institute even artha, dharma, kama, and moksha properly when we don't have a proper functioning varna and ashram system. How can one properly support oneself unless he has a proper system? Of course, in one sense, yes, even if we don't have a varnashram, people work and they get artha, they support themselves. But they do that in a completely illegal way. That is without dharma. So yes, they can do the artha, but then it's not dharma. Artha, dharma, it's adharma. And kama. In the varnashram system, yes, they have kama, but the kama is regulated. The desire and sense gratification is regulated by certain conditions according to varna and ashrama. When we don't have that regulation, kama is there for everybody. So all the ashramas have kama, and all the varnas have kama. So in other words, the varnas and the ashramas both become completely meaningless. We have varnas and ashramas because they restrict kama. They don't completely eliminate it, but they restrict it. And then we have a modern society which completely lifts all the restrictions. So, therefore, very, very difficult to practice the varna and ashram system because of that. We see that the system itself is carefully arranged for gradual progress. That progress can take a long time because it's very difficult to change people. But the whole purpose of the system is gradually to take the people and elevate them through the gunas. Tamaguna is not a good guna. People cannot make proper decisions in tamaguna. So therefore, you have to raise people out of that guna to higher gunas. But it takes a long time. So therefore, the varnashram system has to remain intact for a long time before we see it, the good effects of it, and how people, the jiva, can elevate himself through the different varnas. And gradually, the hope is that eventually he comes to sattva-guna and becomes brahminical. And when he becomes brahminical, then he can strive for moksha, liberation from the material world. So therefore we have artha, dharma, kama, all regulated. The dharma regulates the artha and kama, so that eventually one becomes sattvic, and then one can go for liberation from the material world. The system is there and it is arranged nicely, but it has to be preserved for a long time. To do that, therefore we have the kings controlling everything. And then the king gives it to his son, and he gives to his son, he gives to his son. So they maintain that system consistently, hopefully, for 71 yuga cycles. Manu. And in this way, the earth is peaceful. Everything is regulated, and therefore the earth yields properly at the proper time, and people can live peacefully. So it's a basic system. Now, it's not perfect because it doesn't give prema in itself. So that is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not interested in it as the final solution to everything. Moreover, in Kali Yuga, the kings have disappeared and they're hiding in the Himalayas, so there's no consistent dharma kings to institute the dharma of varna and ashram properly. so therefore cannot effectively act to raise people up. Fortunately, to counter this terrible situation, we have the process of bhakti. So as I mentioned yesterday, even without that system intact, bhakti works. So we don't have to depend on having a nice varnashram system to do bhakti. Without it, it also gives effect. So repeated in the Bhagavatam, we have statements that the Chandala or the Mlecha or whoever, the outcast, they can partake of bhakti. And if they participate in bhakti sincerely, even for a short period of time, they transcend even sattvagun. They're better than a brahmana. They can do whatever a brahman can do. If the brahman does savana or sacrifice, the chandala can also do that if he remembers the lotus feet of the Lord. If he half chants the name of the Lord and it's on the tip of his tongue, then he's already undergone all austerities, all tapasya, all punyas, all brahmachari life, and it's all finished already, and he's beyond that already. So bhakti is a very, very powerful process. And it does not depend on anything else. Rather, everything else depends on bhakti. And even the whole varnashram system is useless unless there's also a little bit of bhakti there, some respect for the Lord. Then the system will work nicely, and one can get one's physical well-being. But otherwise, one is uproot against the Lord, even this varnashram system doesn't work properly. What to speak of jnana or yoga? They also will not give liberation without respect for the Lord. So every other process is dependent on bhakti. Bhakti is not dependent on karma yoga, jnana yoga, or astanga yoga. Ultimately, we can mix them. But if we mix them, we don't get the same result. So we see in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one who is suffering in the material world, he worships the Lord. The Lord says, okay, I accept that person. One who is desirous of wealth and worships the Lord, that's also good. One who's a jigasu, or inquisitive, he's also accepted by the Lord if he worships the Lord. And one who's jnani, one who has knowledge of the Lord, he's accepted by the Lord. So the Lord says, I accept all these people, of which the jnani I think is the best. But then he says later, but the best person is one who simply doesn't desire anything, doesn't want knowledge, doesn't want wealth, doesn't want to get rid of suffering, anything. He simply worships me out of affection. That's the best person. So that means that though one can practice mixed bhakti, sakama bhakti or karma misra bhakti or gan misra bhakti, better than that is pure bhakti. So what happens is you get different results. That's all. So that is why the emphasis is upon pure bhakti in nectar devotion and in the Bhagavatam. Get rid of all of these different types of desires. Yes, the Lord accepts that. It's better than doing karma yoga, jnana yoga, or astanga yoga. Mixed bhakti is better than that. But it's not as good as pure bhakti. So by pure bhakti, we actually get rasa in the spiritual world. And by mixed bhakti, we don't. Or if we do, it's the lower section, shanta rasa, which is not considered too much of a rasa by our acharyas. So, if you do Gyan Misra Bhakti, yes, you can get Shantarasa. If you do Karma Misra Bhakti, you can get Sarupya Salokya Sarsti. You can have comforts in the spiritual world with a nice body and a nice place to live and nice powers. And you get the blessings of the Lord. But, you don't develop that rasa. Dasya Sakya Vatsalya Madhurya Rasa. You can't develop that. Because your bhakti is not strong enough to do that. So the sadhana determines the result. If we do a mixed sadhana, we get a mixed result. If we do pure sadhana, we get pure result. And of course, if we do jnana, we don't even get that. We get only moksha. And if we do karma, we only get svarga loka or brahma loka. So pure bhakti is the best of all. So we don't mix the processes. We should do pure bhakti. If we do pure bhakti, we have cases like Ambarish. He did all the processes of bhakti. It's also described that he was a king. So he also had to follow the dharma of a king and do everything as a king. So he was very clever. Yes, he fulfilled his duties. He appointed other people to do everything for him. All kingly duties, do all the sacrifices, do all the other duties. He didn't want to. He wasn't interested at all. But he was responsible enough to appoint qualified people to fulfill all the duties of the king. And he just did his bhakti, his devotional service, and cleaned the temple, and worshiped the Lord, and chant, and hear, etc. So he was a great devotee. Simultaneously, he fulfilled his duties as the king, a kshatriya in the varnashram system, but without attachment, without involvement. Okay? So there's no harm in doing that. But if one's detached from the results and perform certain activities that aren't contrary to bhakti, yes, you can do those activities. But at the same time, priority is given to devotional service, to bhakti yoga. So that is the main idea. So particularly apt in Kali Yuga, because there is no varnashram system. Therefore, it are very, very weak varnashram system. So we can struggle to make one. But in that struggle to make one, if bhakti becomes less and our struggle to do varnashram is more, it's not healthy for our bhakti. Because bhakti, on the other hand, survives even if we don't have varnashram system. And if we have varnashram system without bhakti, it's useless. So of the two, better to choose the bhakti and emphasize that more than anything else. Therefore we have to put our duties and our obligations and our endeavors in the proper perspective and always emphasize the bhakti. And for that reason, Lord Chaitanya was not much interested when the sannyasis in Udupi, the acharyas there, he had a discussion with them in Udupi, the followers of Madhva. So then he had a discussion. And the Madhva said, yes, the essence of scripture is to follow the varnashram system. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, not correct. The essence of scripture is prema for Krishna. Process of bhakti you should do to get prema. Yeah. And similarly with Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy said, okay, yes, what is the essence of the fall of varnashram? Lord Chaitanya says, no, not. And so, yes, Lord Chaitanya followed varnashram. He was a sannyasi, followed the system. But at the same time, he rejects it. Because it's not the essence. So, Lord Chaitanya being a sannyasi, that's not the thing. Lord Chaitanya doing bhakti, engaged in hearing about the Lord and chanting the Lord's name, that is important. Even if he is a sannyasi. So, for convention's sake, yes, he's a sannyasi, but that's just a position. And it's external. His real nature is to express bhakti, devotion. So therefore, the varnashram system is there, we have to understand, is external in one sense, and it is also dealing with the gunas. Bhakti is nirguna, it is a spiritual process. It is not in the gunas at all. So that's how we have to realize it. It's different, it's superior to all the other processes. And in spite of the gunas, and whatever gunas, it is not, doesn't have a dependence on gunas, whereas other processes do depend on gunas. Jnana depends on sattva guna. If you're not sattva guna, you cannot do jnana or yoga. Karma yoga is dependent on gunas also. Its very nature is to elevate you in gunas from tamoguna to sattva guna, and it's limited to the gunas. But bhakti is not in the gunas, it's beyond the gunas completely. So that is the glory of bhakti. It is superior to all other processes, independent of other processes. And it can give all the effects of other processes. If you want material benefits, bhakti gives that also. Dhruva got a planet better than Lord Brahma's as a result of his bhakti. He didn't want the planet, but the Lord said, yes, you desired that, I give that to you. So bhakti gives everything that karma yoga can give, more than Brahma Loka even. It will give more than jnana can give. Jnana can give maximum liberation, but bhakti gives more than liberation. We get beyond birth and death, definitely, but we get to the spiritual world. It gives more than yoga gives, which also gives liberation. And maybe a view of Paramatma. So, by bhakti, we get darshan of Bhagavan, and we develop rasa with Bhagavan. So, therefore, the devotional process gives whatever the other processes give. Bilbo Mongol Thakur says, yes, and now that I'm doing bhakti, I kick away bhakti and mukti, who are like servants trying to, they're begging, let me serve you, let me serve you, let me give you things. In other words, one doing bhakti, you can get all material things, bhakti. Or you can get liberation. You can get all the benefits of liberation, all the benefits of bhakti. But Dalva Bhanga Thakur says, no, I don't want these things. They will interfere with my bhakti. But they are offered to the devotee, but he doesn't take them. Similarly, Dhruva said, I don't want the kingdom, I don't want anything, because I've seen the Lord, you know. But the Lord said, yes, you have to take it because you had the desire, and I want to give you because you had a desire. So you must take. In any case, it was not a problem for Dhruva. It was not an obstacle to him because he got a spiritual planet in the material world higher than Brahma. It wasn't a material thing at all. And he got darshan of the Supreme Lord there, so there was no problem for that also. But yet, he got the fulfillment of his desire to have a planet better than Lord Brahma's. And before that, he got the kingdom of his father, stepfather. His father resigned and he became the king. Of course, Dhruva ruled the kingdom. At the same time, he never forgot his position as a devotee of the Lord. So he fulfilled his duties as a king, but he was not attached to those duties, and therefore he was qualified to go to the spiritual world in terms of Dhruva Loka with a spiritual body, which was the same as his body as Dhruva. Somehow his body got transformed into a spiritual body of Dhruva, and then he went to Dhruva Loka. So that's the blessing of the Supreme Lord. So the Lord fulfills all desires of the devotee, and he can give anything in the material world. Usually he'll give things which are favorable and not unfavorable for the devotee. If it's unfavorable, he doesn't want to give those things, he may take them away also. And those things which are favorable, he'll give. The prize in bhakti is the Lord gives himself, ultimately. So that is the highest bestowal. In prema, it is the characteristic is Krishna Karshani. Bhakti attracts Krishna. So Krishna gives himself to the devotees in prema. And of course, many forms, even Vishnu says this also, I'm in my devotee, devotees in me. But with Krishna, Krishna gives himself even more to the devotees. So he becomes the real servant of his devotees, as he is with Arjuna on the chariot. He's the driver of the chariot. Or if Mother Yasoda, he gets tied up by Mother Yasoda. And we do not see Ramchandra getting tied up by anybody or Vishnu getting tied up by anybody. But Krishna agrees to be tied up by Mother Yasoda. Even though, as Supreme Lord, he ties everybody up with karma in the material world. He agrees to be tied up by Mother Yasoda. So such pastimes are of surrendering to a devotee are found particularly in Krishna. And of course, as I said previously, in Kali Yuga, Krishna is the object of worship according to Bhagavatam, because he is most attractive in his pastimes, most attractive in his form, most attractive in his qualities, most attractive in his with all the types of rasas and devotees. Okay. Any question?
What does that mean
Well, that has different meanings according to different people, and it's a little bit of a problem because what does it mean? Huh? It's a thing. Well, Prabhupada said that, but what does it mean? Does it mean varnashram for devotees or varnashram for public or what? We want to establish a varnashram government for the population or for the devotees, because it's completely different. So what are we trying to do? So that argument should be settled first. And then when we come to devotees, what do we mean by varnashram system? Do we want to establish varnas for people and make them into sudras and brahmanas and vaishnavas and things? This is contrary to Vaishnava Siddhanta, because the Vaishnava should not be considered in terms of varna. You cannot say he's a sudra Vaishnava. It's aparad to say so. So that maybe the answer would be, well, we're not considering birth because he's a sudra by birth, therefore we're making him a sudra Vaishnava. No. So then we would have to establish varnas not based on birth. But that also becomes a little peculiar, because immediately you do that, the stability of the varnashram system becomes greatly disturbed, because the whole system is based upon father related to son, son teaching the occupation to the child, and he has the same occupation, and therefore there's a stability in the, and there's no speculation about what you're supposed to do when you grow up. It's assumed you take over your father's occupation. Kshatriya, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Vaishya, etc. Sudra, Sudra. Whether it's a Sudra, what should I do next? Should I become a Brahmana when I grow up? Or the Vaishya is thinking, maybe I should become a Brahmana or a Kshatriya. So, and then they shift, then the family system also becomes upset, because you have a Vaishya family and you have a Brahmana son. What does he do? Does he live with the Vaishya father and mother? No, then he has to live separately. So that family system is upset, where we have the children living with the parents and raising their family, and the grandparents raise the children. That's upset also. So it's a little peculiar how to establish such a system. And I don't think anyone solved the problem yet. So to have the varnas themselves is a little peculiar. The other answer, of course, is, well, we just train people up in the different varnas, you know. But then that's no different from modern schools anyway. They train people in different ways, so they have all the occupations there from sudra occupations all the way up to vocational schools, and then we have universities which make you into Vaishyas or maybe Kshatriyas. And you have very little brahminical education anyway. So, yes, you can set up vocational schools, but that's not much different from what people are doing nowadays anyway. So, that's that. Then the other thing is that we want self-sufficient communities, which basically means to have farms. So farms is okay, but that's not a varnashram system. That's a Vaishya community, basically. Huh? It's not a varnashram system. It's a Vaishya community. Yeah. If you're in that system, then you have to support yourself, have your little farm there, and you don't have too much time to study the Vedas and be a brahmachari, whatever, in that system. The Vaishya works. He doesn't become a brahmachari much for maybe a year or half or a year or whatever, and then he goes to work on the farm. So, to what extent we establish a varnashram system? Ultimately, we can take elements of a varnashram system which are favorable to bhakti and apply that. Yes, we can do that. But strictly speaking, no, we cannot really set up the whole system. Very, very difficult to do so. And on top of the whole thing, you need the king. And the king's missing until the next Satya Yuga, so... Or if it's not for the whole society, then for ISKCON society, who's going to be the king? Another problem. So there's a lot of problems involved in having what we mean by varnashram system, actually. And, you know, if we're saying self-sufficient communities, yes, but it's not really varnashram. It's only part of a varnashram. And even that, we're not doing it according to the varnashram system. We're doing it partly. So we take some of the rules and some of the principles and apply it, but not completely, you know. Ashramas are easier to apply to some degree. But then if you have the real ashram system here, only the brahmanas take sannyasi, so the ashram system also depends upon the varna system. So who's the brahmana to take the sannyasi? You know?
I think
that
these qualifications in any case.
Yeah. Now, it's simple in terms of bhakti, because if you do bhakti, we surpass the system. And a person in bhakti can do anything anyway, that's related to service of the Lord, whether it's a Vaishya, Sudra, whatever occupation, he can do that. But it's not absolute for him. Devotional service is the absolute. And he can do anything. He's flexible. He's beyond varnas and ashramas in that sense. So, and we can also take favorable rules like cleanliness, etc., from the varnashram system and apply it to bhakti, because those are rules and regulations which are favorable for your health and your mental health and whatever, physical and mental health. So no problem for those rules also. But beyond that, how much we apply is, you know, controversial. Dasya. Vishnu, he saw Vishnu, and so Vishnu forms, doesn't go beyond Dasya Rasa.